Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. IVEST. I am the Dude.
And I am Grim, and today we are asking the question, did the Who sell out, or did they craft their first of many masterpieces?
Maybe they sold out to create their masterpiece.
Maybe, but I think there's a lot to talk about there. Probably more than just a cozy 5 minutes, but apparently the Who had already done some work recording like jingle type things for whatever it was, right?
Commercials.
Yeah, for commercials.
Advertisements.
Yeah, so I think the whole thing was, to them it was more of a joke because I don't think that was really their main source of income. And a lot of, and they actually got sued by a couple of the companies who they made these things for because they, you know, I guess for IP reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they're like, hey, we don't exactly love the way you're representing our product and what we do.
Yeah.
You know, like you do got to be a little careful.
And I think that there was something where I don't know if it was one of the guys in the band or Lambert and Stamp, who were sort of their manager producers, who asked Odorono for some money for basically repping their product, and they looked at him like they were, you know, a bunch of assholes. Like, no thanks. Exactly.
Right. Well, so they had, I think, a handful of songs and tracks, and Chris Stamp, who is, like you said, one of their managers,
he sort of
put together like a track listing of like, hey, this is what we got, you know, this is, you know, what the next album should be. And Pete Townsend was like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, he's like, yeah, these are good songs, but some of them are just like, they're either inadequate or, you know, and not only that, but like, he's like, he really liked the idea of a concept. And so he wanted a theme and everything for this. And I think them doing the, you know, sort of these jingles and stuff like that, and these advertisement things, you know, he was like, oh, that would be kind of a fun idea to base like an album around. And then he even said, this is about the same time where pirate radio stations were really being outlawed. And so they wanted to take that angle of kind of like having sort of that attitude with what do you call it, like Radio London and stuff.
Yeah, because part of the bit here was that like those the BBC was the main radio network in the UK at that time.
Yeah,
but there was very small and specific times that were actually allotted on the BBC to play anything contemporary. So it was probably pretty boring unless you just like classical music and news all the time. And so these pirate radio stations came up, and there were many of them, and they would be broadcast from ships off the coast. And so like you could hear them in a widespread area. And yeah, I don't know if it was after or around the same time the album was released, they ended up outlawing all but two of them. And they allowed,
that's crazy.
Yeah, for whatever reason, they allowed two of them to remain. And so they first kind of had this idea of, well, we're going to do this as like a tribute to pirate radio stations. And then you get the point where they sort of, where they outlaw it. And then it really becomes even more poignant of a tribute, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting, man, because I feel like with this album, you know, I mean, you kind of said like, you know, is this, you know, sort of their first true masterpiece? Like a lot of times I hear people talk about Who's Next. You hear people talk about Tommy. You hear people talk a lot about Quadrophenia. Right. And so this one for me sort of flew under the radar.
Oh, it did for me for years.
You know, and I think there's a couple reasons for that. One, it was released in 1967. A few good albums came out that year. Sgt. Pepper, Are You Experienced, X as Bold as Love, Doors self-titled,
blah,
Disraeli
blah,
Years.
Blah. Just keep going.
Surrealistic Pillow, Days of Future Past, The Velvet Underground and Nico.
Oh, you did not. Even though no one knew about that album at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
the thing is a lot of those albums, one, were huge albums. Two, had multiple hits. You know, this really had one. You know, hit. I can see for miles, which is an awesome song, but that was like the big hit from it.
Yeah, and that's what I knew off it. My dad had some like Who compilation that was put together called Hooligans, and I remember listening to that a lot as a kid, and I remember I Can See for Miles from basically throughout my life. Love that song. Yep. And the Who for me, I always had Tommy as an album, and I had Who's Next. But for whatever reason, yeah, this one flew under the radar for me. It wasn't until a couple of years ago when I went to the library and you could check out records there. And, you know, it was always interesting because they had this one. And I was like, I need to just listen to this and see. And I put it on once and I was like, wow, I really fucked up there. Like, that is one of the best. Like, I would put this album on before I'd listen to anything else from The Who. No question.
Right.
It's so entertaining to listen to.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely, it's got such a fun concept to it of sort of like the ads and like it's own radio. So it's its own radio channel and everything. It's pretty great. I like the idea and the concept. I'm really glad they sort of went with that. And that's what, you know, The Who likes to do that. And a lot of these songs, it's really funny, man, because, you know, being so familiar with Tommy and Who's Next, especially Tommy, though, you hear there's all these little teases and stuff.
Oh, like, in Real. Oh, man. Yeah, in Real, like, especially. I mean,
for sure.
You're like, did they pull that right off here or re-record it? Because, I mean,
yeah,
the end of Real for sure, man. Absolutely. I don't know if that's called Real Part 2 or what, but.
Real Part 1 and 2 and everything in between. Yeah. Yeah, but for me, it just, you know, I feel like it probably got lost in the shuffle, just sort of in Who albums, but then also the stuff that came out in 67, just things that I was focusing on, like listening to and stuff. You know, but what Esquire magazine, they said when the album came out that, you know, that it basically established them as not just the third best band in Britain, but the third best band in the world.
Yeah.
So I imagine behind the, you know, obviously the Beatles and Stones. So dude, it was kind of like, you know, when you had the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, and then 98 Degrees came out, right? And tried to worm their way in. So essentially what I'm, not have any of that. But
the cover's iconic. I mean, come on. Like, I always knew the cover, but I just like didn't know how good what was under the covers was. But I mean, Townsend with the giant stick of deodorant. Daltrey and the tub of baked beans, who actually got sick because those beans were right out of the fridge and he had to sit in there for like a couple hours, apparently.
That's
in freezing cold baked beans bathtub.
Dude, that's gross.
Keith Moon with the acne treatment, and then, you know, Entwistle with the model because he's taking the Charles Atlas course. And it's going to be, what do they say in the song? A beast of a man. I love it.
Yeah. Now, yeah, it was a cool, interesting cover for sure.
One thing I like, too, is I guess they did this in response to the locked groove at the end of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. But on the vinyl versions of this record, there is a locked groove at the end, and it is fantastic. This is super nerdy. They actually have the locked groove kind of locks in at a different point on the mono and the stereo recordings, the mono one being a little bit better, like it just kind of circulates better, but it's
interesting.
It's a fantastic way, I think, to end the album.
Yeah, it is cool for sure. And they did that sort of like in response to Sgt. Pepper.
Because Sgt. Pepper, but Sgt. Pepper is quite frankly is annoying. I don't really care for it.
Yeah, after a while, it does get
annoying.
And
this one, I can just listen to for a while. It, like, kind of hooks me in, you know?
Never to see it?
Yeah,
but yeah. This one for sure.
Yeah, this one, I love that. I think it's just a nice touch at the end of an album. The tracks flow together really well. I will say, if you listen to the digital versions now, they have cut out the locked groove, which is sort of weak, in my opinion.
It would have been nice to put that in, because even on the, at least I remember on, it'd be interesting to see what the CD was like.
I think they like faded out or something.
Okay. Because that's what they do on for, Sergeant Pepper at the end of that. Like it does the, it does it a few times and then it just kind of fades out or whatever.
Well, I remember listening to it when you still had the version of this online that was just like the normal version, but now of course everything is like super deluxe and Normo Dome edition, and so they just go right from Real into Real 2, and there's no more lock groove.
Yeah, I mean the super deluxe version that I'm looking at has like 5 discs, full versions, different 2018 mixes, mono versions, stereo versions, the Pete Townsend demos. Take 1 and 2.
Yeah, and it's just a little... I will say I did get the stereo version of the album that does have the bonus disc, but there's actual songs on there, and they do an interesting cover of In the Hall of the Mountain King. Alternative version of Marianne with Shaky Hand, which I knew that song. I think that was on the CD version of Odds and Sods that came out, because I knew that... I knew that song upon listening to it for the first time, but none of the other ones other than I Can See for Miles and Miles, I knew. And so it was kind of, kind of sweet, because it was like hearing a new Who album.
Right. Exactly. It was pretty cool. Well, one point I know you were really itching to get at is just kind of like how the Who have just did such an excellent job transitioning from the 60s into the 70s. You know, we didn't want to base the episode on that, but, you know, it's sort of interesting because there is sort of this break point between the 60s and 70s where, you know, going from the psychedelic, you know, bands and stuff into more of a, I guess, what, guitar sound.
Yeah.
And the way some of the bands just, you know, it kind of fell off. But, you know, I felt like the Who, they got stronger. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, this is what, 67, Tommy was 69. And then I think the Who's Next was like 71. And man, that just kind of catapulted them. You know, it's pretty cool to see that. Whereas like, you know, a lot of musicians in the late 60s, you know, Hendrix and the Doors with Morrison and Janis, like a lot of people passed away. And so,
or just kind of the Beatles broke up. I mean,
the Beatles broke up.
Yeah.
But even like, dude, when I was looking at like Santana, like what he came, man, his first couple albums in the late 60s were sweet. And then after that, you know, not to say he didn't make good music, but like those ones were, man, those ones were
after
like
Santana and Abraxas. If you have those ones, you're probably good.
Even like, you know, Bob Dylan after John Wesley Harding, like, you know, it's kind of like, it's like, name me the albums after between John Wesley Harding and Blood on the Tracks. If you're not a super fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
You know? Yeah, I thought anyways, they made sort of they were able to bridge those decades together pretty well.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, so well, anyways, I think, you know, that I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we really answered the question, but is this, you know, would you call this a masterpiece?
Absolutely. I'd rank it in. Not only the best, well, it's tough because Tommy's pretty fantastic, but
do you put it ahead of Tommy and Who's Next?
I'd rather listen to it than either of those at any time.
Okay.
So yes.
Is that because you've heard those for like the past like 20 years?
No, I just like it better. It just does more. It goes more play, you know, and it's not. I love a good double album. Don't get me wrong, but it's just a single record, and I don't know.
You're right.
Yeah. So yes, cool. It is the first masterpiece.
Ooh.
Their first masterpiece.
That's fair. Okay. All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up here, Graham. I'd love to know where some of the Who super fans, where they rank this.
Like, subscribe.
You know, I think they kind of have a big four and where they sort of rank it in that pecking order.
So. I got to really listen to Quadrophenia more because I know a lot of people are into that. I did, and to me,
I've given it a few, and I just had nothing's clicked with me. So definitely have to go back to that one for sure. But I know a lot of people think that's their favorite. So. I guess that's a sign of a really good band, though.
Think all you want. This is better. You heard it here.
All right. All right. So I think on that note, Grim, it is time to go on the Dude and the Grim show, part B of the tracks
coming up next.